Radio power for the people. 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff Humfeld. Every day we each create and live the history of tomorrow. And for most of us, the impact of what we do will be felt by just a few. And then again, for a few, what they do will be felt by many. March is Women's History Month, and Jaws of Justice Radio wants to spend some of our time on air talking with local women who have been and still are creating the history of our community. During the month, we will talk with women that are fighting for health care, resources for neglected segments of our community, supporting victims of violence and abuse, and working to eliminate that violence and much more. These women are truly heroes and need to be recognized as such. On today's broadcast, we start off Women's History Month by replaying an interview Allie Catherine Bush did in 2015 with Justine Burton, founder and director of Stop Gap Incorporated of Lawrence, Kansas. They are a grassroots nonprofit organization working for youth that age out of foster care and other at-risk youth. Then, in the second half of the show, I will return with Esther Holzendorf, Executive Director of Consolidated Social Work Services, and we will talk about the Chestnut Avenue Family Resource Center and creating community despite governmental neglect and a lack of resources. Stay tuned for the calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Now, here is Allie Catherine Bush and Justine Burton.
This is Allie Catherine Bush, your guest host today on Jaws of Justice. My guest today is a founder and executive director of Stop Gap Incorporated. They are located in Lawrence, Kansas. Welcome this morning to Justine Burton.
Thank you.
Justine, tell us about Stop Gap Incorporated and how you help children that are in the foster care program.
Stop Gap, Inc. is a grassroots organization that I founded in 2008. And when I founded the organization, it was to work for youth that age out of foster care and other at-risk youth in Lawrence, Kansas. And also what I do is we have a youth empowerment outreach program that I started. Now, when I first started the organization, I had the big idea of having the transitional living program, which I found out later was a little bit more expensive. So I said, well, these kids really need a lot of help now. So I went into the outreach program. And in our outreach program, what we do, we teach kids life skills, some things that older people now take for granted, where they learn how to budget their money, how to do their finances, what it means to prepare for a job, and what they need to do to prepare for a job as well. Also, we teach how to find an apartment. How to read a lease, what that means, and what it means to maintain an apartment also. The program is 3 years old now, and since it started in 2012, I believe we graduated probably about, we had about 50 kids go through the program. Okay. Oftentimes, the kids that we have actually aren't from Douglas County, so we get a lot of kids that come through our organization and the outreach program from different other counties in Kansas. Mm-hmm. We get our kids from the Shelter Inc. in Lawrence, okay, which works with kids, and they have group home for kids. So their kids come there, and our program is like 8 weeks program that we have for the kids.
Okay.
The kids' ages are sometimes between 12 and 17. Sometimes, and right now, I have a young lady that's getting ready to turn 18 in March, and so she's going to be aging out of the system. So these are the kids that I really, really want to help. Once they age out of the foster care system, oftentimes, you know, they couch surf with friends if they don't have any place else to go or have that family support that they need. So once they age out, they're out there 6 months to a year, usually after they age out, these kids are homeless. Mm-hmm. So with our outreach program being 3 years old now, my focus is on getting funding so we can start a transitional living program. And the transitional living program basically is going to be an 18 to 24 month program, and whereby it gives the kids, once they age out of foster care, it gives them that option to come into our program for that time.
Okay.
You know, instead of going to the street.
Okay.
It'll be something that's monitored on a 24/7 basis, so we would have somebody there. And also that the outreach program, the classes that we teach there will be implemented into the transitional living program. So finding someone that has those skills and still needs to teach those skills to those kids as far as how to maintain a home and things like that. That's what the transitional living program would also entail. But with that, it would be kind of a self-regulated. We would have our own standard rules that they'd have to go by. But also, I want the kids to have that control, still have some control of their lives. So it would be self-regulated, whereby they can say, okay, I'd like to be able to do this in addition to doing that. But be able to have something that they can say, okay, this is my life. I'm in control of my life, and this is the things that I want to do. Okay. So once they leave that transitional living program, what I'm looking at is, then they are able to live independently on their own. And I always say, you know, once they leave there, we're still there for them. It's not going to be, okay, you're there for 18 or 24 months, and then you're out and, you know, you're out of our life.
Okay.
That's not the way this works. Okay. The way this works is that once they leave, they still have that support, kind of a safety net, if you will.
Okay.
They still have that support. And also, and I always say, you know, once they get tired of looking at me, then I think they know what they've got what they need.
Okay.
So until that time, they can come back as much as they want to us. And, you know, if they need help with finding a job or wanting to help us interview or help them with the application process or anything like that, be able to have that safety net so they know that there's somebody out there that cares.
Okay, now you say some of them are from out of the area. So how did they get familiar with Lawrence and what's going on there as far as them living their lives?
Yeah, and I'm not for sure. Some of them are child in need of care, and they come through probably DCF. And then, you know, I guess they go into these, you know, shelters and until they can, whatever happens to them, you know. That's usually the other section of it that I'm not that familiar with. But how they get there, I would say it was probably because of some family issues or something they had. And there were probably some of them probably taken away from their family. Some of them might have done something wrong, you know, something like that. So that's how they get to the Shelter Inc. And then, like I said, they send them over to us, and we don't only just take kids that are in group homes. We take kids that just need help.
Okay.
You know, if they feel that this is something they need, if a family member, a parent, or, you know, a foster care parent, or somebody feels like these are some skills that these kids need, then by all means, you know, bring them to to our organization. And like I said, it's an 8-week program, so that's something that we can help them with.
Okay. Now, I guess you are visible in the area, in Lawrence. So how do people find out about you as far as getting their children involved?
Well, usually I think it's kind of like word of mouth or something, more or less. I'm out there usually talking to people, meeting with businesses, telling them who I am. So trying to get that community awareness, and that's still kind of where I am too. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people know that I'm there, but, you know, sometimes they still don't know what I'm doing. Okay. And so being able to get, you know, the organization's name out there, let them know what we're doing, and be able to, you know, get that funding that we need, especially for the transitional living program. And so that's kind of what I'm focused on, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay, as far as funding, how do you stay in operation?
Well, through individual donations. Right now, that's kind of what it is. If people want to donate to the organization, they can donate to the organization. And sometimes I have this one organization that I belong to called the Optimus Club in Lawrence, Breakfast Optimus Club. And so they started this year giving us some annual funding, which would help. And then where I am as far as my office and where I have my office space and stuff at, Reverend Leo Barbie, he has a church called the Victory Bible Church. And so actually he donated that space. There for a while, like, so the money was coming out of my pocket. But this is something, like I said, that I'm passionate about. And the main thing I worry about is helping the kids. But he found out, you know, that we was looking for space and stuff. And he donated office space and a space also in his church where I conduct the outreach program as well. So but as far as the funds, that's kind of where the funds are come from, is just the individual donors and stuff.
Okay. You say you teach life skills. Do you help the kids plan their education while they're at your facility?
We do as much as we can. And like I said, because these kids are in state custody, you know, they do have case managers.
Oh, okay.
But what I do teach about continuing education. You know, I give them the information about, you know, how to complete a FAFSA. And also, once these kids do leave, and a lot of the kids sometimes they don't get this information, but the state of Kansas will pay for their college, 4 years of college for these kids. So, but like I said, you know, when you're young and you're homeless, you know, you're not going to find too many of them is going to sit down at a computer and try to find out what you need to go to get this information. So we try to give them this information while they're there and give them the information of, you know, there's four-year colleges. You know, you got your two-year, and then you got your VOTEC schools as well. You know, so they at least can be able to have some kind of, know that they have a choice. You know, everybody at that point really doesn't want to go to a four-year college, and they might not be in that place mentally at that time to want to go to a four-year college. So being able to start out at a VOTEC school, then maybe move up to a junior college, and then maybe if they want to continue that education, but at least show them the options that they have.
Okay, Justine, I know you mentor them in education. What about other activities, going to church or leisure time or things like that?
And that would be for the case managers to do.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Like I said, when you're working with with kids, especially far as state custody, you don't want to overstep your bounds.
Right.
So I leave that part to their case managers and to the people that they're in custody with.
Okay. Do you have any volunteers that help you out?
I have a young lady now. I had a few volunteers, but they all graduated from KU this year. Okay. So I have one young lady now that's working with me. Her name is Kaylee Koch. And she's more out in the community talking to people and trying to get in kind services and stuff for the organization. So, mm-hmm. And she's really good. I did have this one young lady that was with me for 2.5 years. Her name was Molly Shim, mm-hmm. And she was awesome. She was really great. She graduated here in December. So she's really missed.
Okay. What are the entertainment activities that they do, leisure time, or how do they get from one place to the other? Do you have transportation for them?
The transportation to our outreach program is provided provided by the group home workers that work there and stuff, so they come there. But you know, while they're in the outreach program, like I said, the skills and stuff, I make it fun for the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to make it fun for them because the information, you know, these kids are young, so the information we're trying to give is kind of boring. Mm-hmm. So we try to make it as fun as possible, and we make it more hands-on. You know, so we're not just teaching theory. Mm-hmm. You know, we make sure that. Like I said, if we're teaching them how to write a check, I have some copies of checks where they have to learn how to write a check, and they have to, and I teach them how to balance a checkbook, and we have this other organization that we work with. We just last Thursday, Willow Domestic Violence Center, mm-hmm. in Lawrence, and so a young lady from there, she came and had a game that we played, but the game was teaching these kids the difference between a good relationship and a bad relationship, and how to really recognize, you know, how some teenagers now they have violence in their relationships, and that's mm-hmm. kind of what that was teaching. You know, what would you do, and you know, if this were to happen to you, and so mm-hmm. so that was a good game, and the kids really enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, that's a very important life teaching experience. Justine, let me take a quick break here to let our listeners know that have just tuned in that you are the guest today from Stop Gap Incorporated, located in Lawrence, Kansas. This is the Jaws of Justice program. I am Allie Catherine Bush on KKFI 90.1 FM. All right, Justine, let's get back to some more activities that you do. What is the vision there again for that organization?
Well, our vision is to make sure that all kids that are unable to live in a family unit mm-hmm. Will be able to flourish in life.
All right. The medical expenses, are they also through the agency? They come
yes.
to you?
Yes.
Or they come
yes.
to the agency?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, and you know, I would say also that I think roughly around over 400,000 kids nationally are in the foster care system, mm-hmm. and that's on a national basis. So then you have approximately 20,000 kids that age out of foster care each year. Mm-hmm. So on a daily level, let's say you probably got between 60 and 70 kids that age out a day mm-hmm. in foster care.
Okay.
So that's a troubling number. Of kids that don't have anybody to turn to, don't have nobody to be able to talk to, or like I said, once they become homeless, they're out there on the street, they get caught up in the sex trafficking, which is getting pretty prevalent now. Mm-hmm. You meet people that are been on the street for a while, that are seasoned, and they know when these kids are young, mm-hmm. and they know how to talk to these kids. They know how to get these kids, draw them in. Mm-hmm. And these kids are abused physically, mentally. They wind up on drinking, you know, on drugs. And sometimes this is just basically to be able to function.
Mm-hmm. To survive.
Yeah, yeah. So I know what these kids go through. I experience this myself. Mm-hmm. So that's my main reason for helping these kids, because I know how it is. And when I was living on the street, it was scary then. Mm-hmm. And things are a lot scarier now than they were when I was living on the street. Matter of fact, it was right here in Kansas City, Missouri, mm-hmm. where I lived on the street. And when you're on the street and you have no one, people treat you like they want to treat you because they know that they don't have to answer to anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these kids are beat, killed, you know, living on the street. Mm-hmm. And nobody, you know, nobody cares.
Yeah, so I guess that's why we have so much crime as far as drive-by shootings and just in the last few months, all the poor children that were just victims, even in their homes.
Yeah.
So it's not just being homeless. You could be right there, and they're just not getting the proper, parental care that they need.
Right. And, that's a scary thing. And I think, you know, for these kids to be out here on the street, like I said, what is the cause? What's causing this? Mm-hmm. Is it anger, or what is it that they're scared of that they mm-hmm. have to go by and kill people and take somebody else's life? You know, I can't figure that out.
Well, Justine, it has been really interesting to hear about how you're assisting, including those agencies that help you. So what we want to do this morning is to let people know how they can get in touch with you, give donations or whatever, since you don't get any government funding.
Well, thank you.
What is the location in Lawrence?
Okay, we're located at 1942 Massachusetts Street.
Okay.
And that's Lawrence, Kansas, 66044.
And you also have an email if someone wants to contact you. What is that email?
Okay, the email is stopgapinc.org@gmail.com.
Okay, and then your website if people want to take a look and see what's going on.
Okay, our website is stopgapincorporated.org.
And your phone number?
Phone number is area code 785-856-7833.
All right. I wanted to share something with you myself about my nephew. When he was 16 years old, he came to stay with me for a while, and I tried to help as much as I could since his parents weren't available. They had health issues, so he stayed with me. After he graduated over in Kansas City, Kansas, he went to Denver, Colorado, to finish his college. Mm-hmm. Met a girl there. They got married. And just a few months ago, they have a little baby girl.
Oh, so that's sweet.
I'm patting myself on the back that I did, my share in the foster care program. So he was very successful because he knew someone cared, and I was just his aunt.
Right. And that's what these kids need. Mm-hmm. You know, they need that somebody out there, that support system, know that somebody cares. Mm-hmm. And I'll pat you on your back myself, because that's outstanding. I mean, that's what it's all about, is making sure that you reach out to these kids because they are kids. Okay. And just because, they don't have someone, that doesn't mean that they don't need that support in their life. Everybody needs that.
Even if it is another family member, we encourage them to help also. Please give your phone number where people can reach you.
Okay, again, it's 785-856-7833.
Okay. Justine Burton, the executive director and founder of Stop Gap Incorporated, located in Lawrence, Kansas, has been our guest this morning. thank everyone for tuning in to Jaws of Justice. Thank you for being here.
And thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate that.
Now, the calendar for March 6th. The Criminal Justice Task Force will meet Monday, March 6th, from 6:45 to 8:45 p.m. at the Church of the Good Shepherd, 4947 Choteau Drive, KCMO. The Criminal Justice Task Force mission is to lobby the Missouri State Legislature for sentencing laws that are fair and basic human rights, including protection against cruel and unusual punishment for those that are incarcerated. For information, contact Robin Johnson at 816-522-4081 or by email at redrob, that's R-E-D-R-O-B, 2655 at yahoo.com. The Kansas City Chapter of Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty will meet Tuesday, March 7th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church, 4501 Walnut, KCMO. They will be discussing upcoming events and House Bill 135, a death penalty repeal bill in the Missouri Legislature. Mothers of Incarcerated Sons and Daughters will have their monthly meeting Saturday, March 11th, from noon to 2 p.m. at the Waldo Branch Library, 201 East 75th Street, KCMO. If you have a loved one that is incarcerated and need advice and support, MISD has members that may be able to help. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Please tune in next week when we talk with Miss E of Girl. Give yourself real love. This is Jeff Humfeld, and today I'm going to be talking with one of my own inspirations and also sort of my boss, because I am a board member of Consolidated Social Work Services. Anyway, later this week, she will be facing a judge who will pass sentence on her for fighting for health care for citizens young and old in Missouri. She, of course, is also Executive Director of Consolidated Social Work Services and the Chestnut Family Resource Center. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio, Esther.
Thank you, Jeff. It's good to be here.
Well, let's start with the Medicaid 23 situation. Some people, really didn't even know that that happened. So let's start from the beginning. This was, your role came through the Human Dignity and Justice Coalition.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you all decided to do?
Okay, the Human Dignity Economic Justice Coalition was put together by Reverend Wallace Horsfield Sr. And the purpose was to bring organizations and individuals together to form a coalition that would stand up and speak out for those who they have a voice, but nobody's listening to. So it was a vision of Reverend Horsfield that we come together to support in any way that we could those situations that involve people and the concerns of the people. And so that's how we became involved with the Medicaid expansion situation, because we do have a state and city legislative agenda.
Okay, well, the Medicaid 23 designates the 23, actually, I think there was 24, but people that stood up in the gallery of the Missouri Senate and prayed and sang and, in effect, disrupted their proceedings.
That's correct.
In support of Medicaid expansion.
That's correct.
And at the time, you were ushered out, but you were not arrested. Is that correct?
That is correct.
But even though you were not arrested,
The prosecutor in the county down there decided that in Boone County, I believe it is.
Cole County,
decided that he was going to press charges anyway.
And he did.
So you all went to a trial. You had two charges against you.
Yes.
And you were convicted of one of the charges.
That's correct.
Which charge was that?
Trespassing.
Trespassing.
We were found not guilty of disturbance and convicted of trespassing. This was in 2014 when this all started.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so you were trespassing in the public's
house.
Gallery.
Yes.
In
the people's house.
Yeah, in the Senate.
Yes.
I still am a little bit confused about that, but I imagine you are too.
We all are. Yeah.
All right. You went through trial.
Yes.
And were convicted.
Yes.
And Jay Nixon, in all of his wisdom before he left the governor's office, gave everyone a pardon.
Yes. That wanted but, one.
Yes. But you were one of those that rejected the pardon.
That's correct. I did not seek a pardon.
And why don't you tell us why and what happens this end of this week?
The purpose of us being there in 2014 had to do with the fact that so many people are suffering and dying because of lack of quality, accessible, affordable health care. That was the purpose for us being there. I did not seek a pardon, Jeff, because I do not believe we did anything wrong. So I don't really see any reason to ask the state of Missouri to forgive me for something that I did not. I wasn't wrong for doing. Now, that is not to say that I in any way believe that the ones who did seek a pardon are any less than the seven of us who didn't. We were labeled the Medicaid 23 by somebody. I don't know who did that, but we are all still in this together. So come Friday the 10th, the seven of us have been ordered to appear in Cole County to appear before the judge for sentencing.
Okay. Do you know what penalties are possible for that particular infraction?
Well, that can be a fine. I don't think there's any jail time with this, but we do plan to appeal. So I don't know where this is going to end up, but I do know this, we're not sitting down, the seven of us are not sitting down saying, well, what are you going to say? What are you going to do? We all made a conscious decision. The seven of us who did not take the pardon, did not request a pardon, we made a decision on our own that we would not ask the state of Missouri to forgive us. Missouri has not expanded Medicaid. There are thousands of people who are suffering and will continue to suffer because they do not have quality insurance coverage. So I don't know, Jeff, where this is going to end up, where I am concerned, but I do know this one thing. I'm going to stand on what I believe is right, and wherever that leads me, that's where I'll go.
All right. In that same vein, you're not just a quote, protester, and I don't think you got paid for any of that, did you?
Sure didn't. We're not being paid to do what we do, to the contrary.
But you are director, executive director of Consolidated Social Work Services, and I'd like you to tell the folks here that are listening exactly what Consolidated Social Work Services is.
Okay. Quickly, I'll try to give you a brief overview. You know, I already know this, Jeff, because you're on the board of directors. But in 2003, I had a vision for connecting the dots. And it had to do with bringing people together to reinforce this whole idea of a three-strand cord is not easily broken. So I wrote something called Consolidated Social Work Services. And we had it incorporated, and the mission of Consolidated is to assist individuals and communities to live a positive, productive life. in order to do that, it's our belief that you have to bring people, organizations, agencies together. So we have spent probably about 10 years networking, collaborating, meeting with other organizations, meeting with other people to bring them together under this umbrella. And each organization, they have their own mission, but you bring them together so that they can put together focus groups and support groups that can actually solve problems once those problems are identified. It's my belief that if you're going to work on something, a problem, first identify the problem. So that's what we do. Now, Consolidated Social Work Services worked with this land bank, and we acquired a property, as you understand it, 3811 Chestnut. And we raised the funds and had it renovated, and that is now the Chestnut Avenue Family Resource Center at 3811 Chestnut, Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay. Let's take a step back from the resource center and talk about Consolidated Social Works collaborations, who they can collaborate with, and what, you know, what's the value of collaborating with other organizations?
Okay, we collaborate. Let's say the New Gray Panthers. The New Gray Panthers work mainly with elders. And so we have worked with them and others. And the concerns that they have right now are transportation and housing for elders and voting. So we're working with them to try to strengthen those particular areas. We're focusing with the New Gray Panthers on those areas. The gentlemen of the round table, their interest is in helping young people, particularly those who have been in prison or getting out. And so they have acquired a building, and they're working to renovate that so that they can start classes down there. And so we're working with them on that.
All right. Our role would be in providing services. In
providing social services.
Helping them develop the programs that would actually, you know, work with these prisoners and former prisoners.
Yes.
And get them ready for society.
Yes. And there are some ladies in the community that have written a education piece to this. And that's Ms. Joyce Magatha, Mrs. Clark, and Sister Janae Relaford. And Davis. And so they will be working, helping to establish a educational foundation. And as a matter of fact, we have a meeting with Dr. Bedell, the superintendent of schools, on the 17th with Human Dignity Economic Justice Coalition and Reverend Wallace Horsfield.
You know, listening to what you said, and, you know, I've sat through lots of these meetings and all, and I just at this point, I realized, looking at all the collaborations and all the you know, connections, that it's kind of like Legos or something or other. You're putting one block on top of the next block on top of the next block, and what you're in effect saying is that the effort here is to build an infrastructure for the community.
Yes, exactly. I don't think that anyone should build something and tell people to come to it. I think that the community should be at the table. They should take ownership on square one, so to speak. And then they can identify what's going on with them. A person knows what's going on in their life. When I was in corrections, I felt the same way about the offenders. Bring them in and let them have some say-so as to what their life is going to look like while they're incarcerated, and then what do they need to be successful once they're released. So I think once we have enough respect for each other and take the time to talk to one another and not about one another, and respect the expertise of every individual. Everybody is somebody, and everybody has something to say. If we listen to what that person has to say and bring them in, put all of that information together, use what you can, and build on it, then you can build a successful infrastructure where people can be successful. Because often failure, Jeff, you and I have talked about this before, failure is due to lack of access. So we can't tell a person, a young person, to go somewhere and be successful, and we haven't given them a quality education. We can't tell elders to remain in their community, and we haven't built a safe environment for them to live in. We collaborate with Chief Forte and the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. I think we have to be realistic in what we do. One or two people or one or two organizations or one or two agencies is not going to solve the problems of society. We have to work together, and we can do it. And you know, Jeff, we work without grant money or anything. We work out of our pockets, so to speak. But it can be done. And we keep that resource center open because of generous support of people such as yourself and other board members and other people in the community, and getting funding, you know, to keep the lights on and the gas and the water and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's no easy task, but we can get it done if we work together.
Well, I think that's one of the things, too, that is important in the whole idea of collaboration, is that you take the meager resources that are there, mm-hmm. and you make them go that much further.
Exactly.
When you involve more people in that whole process.
And, yeah, and you I wanted to say something right here. Community Capital Fund helped us get started, as you know.
They did.
Nelleton Foundation has helped us. Dr. Joan McDowd in UMKC Coalition, and she is the director of the UMKC Consortium for Aging in Community. And Joan has been I can't really say enough about her. She is such a go-getter. I mean, she has been down on that block, and we clean up older people's yards. You know that. You've been down there hauling trash and cutting yards and calling people to get old tires picked up. But Joan is in there, you know, with her sleeves rolled up, and bring some of the students from UMKC and some of the elders. I mean, we've even had grandparents down there helping. So it's I just wanted to say that, you know, that working together, y'all have really accomplished a lot down there in that community.
Well, I think one of the things that I really appreciate about Joan's involvement is the fact that I think she brought the whole idea of food being an integral part of
yes.
this, whether it be gardening, whether it be, you know, we're having an event and inviting people from the neighborhood in to give their input or whatever. And she's always make sure that there's something there to, you know, bread to break and
yes.
share or whatever.
Always.
Whatever
yes.
it is.
Yes.
And I think that's, you know, I think that's real important.
It is important. And we have a raised bed. We raised some vegetables there last year, and we were able to give those out in the community. Joan and some of the other friends who collaborate with her and with us, they provided fruit. There's an organization that they have members, and sometimes the members don't pick up all of their vegetables, so they donate them to us, and so we're able to give those out. We have a membership with Kansas City Community Gardens, and we also have two lots now that, thanks to Joan, that we're going to utilize. We have a meeting with a gentleman on the 11th, I believe it is, with Urban Gardening. And so they're looking at collaborating with us to put in gardens. So that's going to be a big help to getting fresh vegetables to the neighbors. And our concern really is about the elders. I call them sundowners, because they go in their house at sundown and you don't see them anymore until the next day because they're afraid to come out. But since we've been down there on the block, I noticed that there is more activity now. There's more elders moving around, sitting on their porches, and when the weather it permits. So we're excited about what's going on. We have some peach trees. We planted two dwarf peach trees last year, as you know, and we got some peaches. So we're looking at putting in some dwarf apple trees. And I know it's going to take a while for them to come in, but you know, once you get them in the ground, then you have something to look forward to. So we're looking forward to this spring planting season.
Well, I hope our apple trees over there do better than the ones I have at home.
Oh, well, you know, sometimes it's a kind of iffy situation, but we're going to try.
All right. The Chestnut Avenue Family Resource Center came out of a whole different idea, really. The model block idea. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about, you know, what that, you know, how that model block idea came about?
Okay. Actually, this started, as you know, back in 2010, when he's now Representative Brandon Ellington, but then he was Brandon Ellington. And he, you know, he had been doing a lot of work in the community, he and his mother, Miss E. And I've known the Ellington family since before Miss E or Brandon was born. You know, I'm not going to say how long ago that was, but it was 1957, so you do the math. But he talked to us about his vision for starting, you know, to clean up the blocks. They were already going around picking up trash and stuff. So Brandon and I were talking one day. I said, Brandon, how would it be if we started a model block project? I said, let's build a block that is so beautiful and so magnificent and so wonderful that everybody in the state of Missouri and around the world will look at it. I mean, we were just talking and you know, just envisioning the possibilities. So we said, yeah, Miss Esther, that sounds like a good idea. So that's actually how it started.
Well, I'm glad you brought in the whole aspect of all around the world, and because I think there's something that a lot of people in Kansas City don't realize about Kansas City, and that especially the east side of Kansas City, and that is, you know, we have two lots that we just acquired. Mm-hmm. There are two more lots right next to that.
Yes.
And those lots are owned by someone in Paris.
That's
right.
And
I'm not talking Paris, Texas.
No, it's Paris, France.
Paris, France. And we, you know, in investigations of the block and some of the surrounding blocks, we found that there's a lot of property in that area over there that is owned by people in all parts of the world, but also all parts of the country. And, you know, they are not being held to the same standard that those of us that live in Kansas City and own property here are held to.
That's correct. That is correct. And back to Representative Brandon Ellington, now that he's in the House of Representatives, you know, he still connects to the neighborhood and he still connects to the community. Now, you're talking about people who have a total disconnect. You know, these are not just absentee landowners. These are individuals who own land and property that they probably don't even know they own. Because people can come into these neighborhoods and into these low, you know, these blighted areas, low income areas, and they bundle this property and they sell it like an investment properties. So people probably don't even know that they own some of this stuff. And nobody's holding them accountable, apparently, because, well, you know this, Jeff, it is terrible. The weeds and the blight. It doesn't make sense for people to be so neglectful.
You know, I would have to go back to one of the houses on the end of the block that somebody, and I can't remember where the owner for that one is. It's, I think, in California somewhere or something. And I'm sure that they bought that property on the idea that, all right, this is a Section 8 property. Mm-hmm. And I've got guaranteed income.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is that it had fallen out of compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And was basically inhabitable.
Mm-hmm.
But they still owned this property thinking that they were going to get some kind of return back out of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, they, in some ways, they are a victim also.
They are. They are a victim, but they're not a victim in the way that we are a victim.
You're exactly right.
Because it's dangerous. It sets people up to fail. It's not good for young people to get up in the morning to try to go to school and have to go through filth and garbage. And this is just the truth. And the city council persons and all the people who are responsible for making quality decisions about people need to get out of those offices and come out and look at what we're looking at. And that's one of the things that we do, Consolidated Social Work Services. We don't we don't just identify problems. We try to work with people to come up with the resources to solve the problems. And we need more cooperation. We need funding. We need help. Because, as I said early on, one or two people or one or two organizations is not going to do this. We need the city. We need all officials at the federal, state, and city level working together, and the county. Everybody needs to be working together with grassroots individuals. I don't know if you remember the old weed and seed programs. They worked because they had wraparound services. That's what we need, Jeff. We need wraparound services. I'm a social worker, yes. And Consolidated Social Work Services, I believe in being a change agent. And that means you have to involve everybody. Churches, community members, neighbors, old people, young people. You have to involve everybody.
Well, as you said, we need to involve everyone. And we have been starting to get some folks in the neighborhood involved. If there's other people out there listening today that think they want to be involved in somehow or might have some resources that they think would be helpful, how would they get a hold of?
Okay, our telephone number at the Family Resource Center is 816-701-6534. 816-701-6534. That's actually the best way to get in touch with us. Now, I'm out in the field most of the time, but we do have someone who checks messages. So, and then I come in, I try to get into the office at least once a day, sometime during the day. I just can't say for sure just when, because like I said, we're doing a lot of networking. So, but if you just call us, 816-701-6534, we'd be awfully happy to hear from you.
Esther, I want to thank you very much for coming in today, and I do want to tell you, you are one of my heroes.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Our guest on the next Cultural Baggage Show will be Canadian Senator Larry Campbell.
It's really motivating when my local officials have just stopped arresting people for 4 ounces of marijuana, but there's many different parameters and tactics in this drug war, many of them failures. Here to talk about some of the positives and negatives up in his nation of Canada is Canadian Senator Larry Campbell. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us. Mr. Campbell, the drug war is hanging on by its nails at this moment. It's trying to cling to this need to lock up our youth for being stupid from time to time. Am I right, sir?
Well, I think it's an ongoing evolution that we see happening, and I think that I would agree with you that the drug warriors are hanging on, but I think that more and more society realizes that the war is not really a war, and that if it was a war, the generals would have been fired a long time ago. I mean, I point to, you know, your county where you live, the realization that using police resources for what is in effect a relatively innocuous medicinal plant is simply not good use of resources. And in this day and age, when resources are important and money is scarce, we need to really take a look at it. So, it's not just in Canada, it's everywhere. I mean, we see how many states have legalized marijuana. It's everywhere in the world that we realize that we're spending an inordinate amount of money. We're causing really gross hurt to our communities. There, of course, is racism involved in it, and it's simply not good government policy.
Yes, sir. Now, you know, many of those who stand in opposition to change, like our new Attorney General, Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions,
I would say they're suffering from arrested development, because ideas and thoughts on issues change as you get older, as you experience more, they change, and hopefully they change for the better. The problem with most people who can't accept they can't accept change is that they're simply afraid of change.
Dean Becker, drugtruth.net.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and the guest of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, or its staff and volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio page on Facebook. If you have a show idea or you want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at kkfi.org. This is your engineer for Jaws of Justice Radio, Beth Pike. And be sure to tune in Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. when I host the Thirsty Thursday edition of your Morning Buzz. Our outro music is Better Man, and that's from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Khadija and the White Guy at 9 a.m. on Thursdays, and then Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues. That's with Luscious Lynn. And then at noon, it's Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. You'll want to stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and then Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo en Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.